Our fourth case of this morning, Griffin v. Barnhart. And Mr. Mulvaney.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Patrick Mulvaney. I represent Willie Griffin in his appeal from the judgment of the U.S. District Court of the Southern District of Indiana affirming the decision of the Social Security Administration that he is not entitled to receive Social Security disability insurance benefits. We raise three general areas of error that require reversal of this case. First, the Step 3 denial decision is erroneous and not supported by substantial evidence. The credibility determination is contrary to Social Security Ruling 96-7P, and the Step 4 determination is contrary to Social Security Ruling 82-62.
Mr. Mulvaney, I have a question about Mr. Griffin's mental capacity, because it seems that he worked for a very long time before this accident, the gunshot accident. And it was after that that he began experiencing all this pain. But I don't see why the gunshot accident would have had anything to do with his mental capacity. It wouldn't. But why can we say the mental capacity impedes him from working?
1205C looks at both IQs between 60 and 70, but an additional mental or physical impairment that would render the person disabled. As long as he was able to perform very heavy work, he could do concrete cement work until he got shot. He always had mild mental retardation. He always was illiterate. After he got shot, he could no longer stand very long or lift very much or do any of the physical work. And this is true commonly with persons with low IQs. As long as their body holds up, they can work. But once the body goes down, they're done. They're totally disabled. And so in this case, after he got shot, he couldn't work. He then developed adjustment disorder with depressive features. And so he had both an additional mental problem and some quite severe physical problems, which fully met the requirements of Listing 1205C. Now, the judge didn't ever mention 1205C. He never considered it. He never discussed the evidence.
It's because there were no IQ tests. I mean, there were no tests.
And he had an obligation, we believe, under this court's holdings, to obtain one. Dr. Jarman testified that if we really want to know if he was retarded, that he needed additional testing done.
But, you know, I think there's some line drawing that needs to happen here, because although there certainly are cases, and you've cited them, that indicate that the ALJ has some responsibility to make sure the record is developed. This is not a purely inquisitorial system where somebody just puts in an application for benefits, and at that point it's entirely up to the ALJ to develop the entire record no matter what. I mean, we expect a certain amount of presentation of evidence on the part of the applicant for benefits.
This court
the question
has ruled,
is where to draw the line.
This court has ruled that the claimant has a burden of proof to prove his case, but it's also ruled, notwithstanding, that if it's necessary to obtain consultative evaluations to properly evaluate the claimant's case, this is not an adversary model of adjudication.
Well, I'm just saying there's a line to be drawn, because at the extreme, there is either a purely inquisitorial system where the applicant has no burden at all and it's all up to the ALJ, or at the other extreme, it's like a court case where it's normally just the burden of the parties. And this is a system somewhere in the middle. And I guess the thought that you don't even have to put in the tests that show that you might be enlisting 12.05 or any other listing, and that it's really just up to the ALJ to kind of sift through other medical testimony and say, well, looks like somebody said maybe something might be helpful, so I'm just going to pick up the ball and go with it. There's a serious question here as to where the ALJ's burden kicks in.
Three doctors said additional testing needs to be done to determine whether or not this person is disabled.
Dr. O'Brien just says rule out mild mental retardation.
Thought there was some evidence of mild mental retardation that should be further evaluated.
That doesn't tell us if it's full-scale IQ 60 through 70 or 75 or whatever. It's just
mild mental retardation
out.
Means below 70. 70 or
if
below.
If Dr. O'Brien was being that precise, he's just put, I mean, doctors write rule out you know, here and there. It doesn't mean you think it's there. It just means you think maybe it's there, maybe
right.
it isn't.
And Dr. Jarman said those words indicate that further evaluation would be necessary. Dr. Stump testified there was almost no evidence to evaluate his physical impairments and that further evaluation would be necessary. I would reserve the remainder of my time, Your Honor. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Studzinski.
Good morning. May it please the Court. My name is Ed Studzinski. I represent the Commissioner of Social Security in this matter. Mr. Griffin applied for Social Security disability benefits after he was shot in April 2002. He was 39 years old at that time. He underwent surgery for injuries to his kidney and his intestines. As this Court has noticed, prior to being shot, Mr. Griffin worked consistently for a number of years. Amongst the jobs he performed, those included multiple semi-skilled jobs.
But of course, as Mr. Mulvaney correctly points out, it's the addition of an additional physical impairment that would bring him within the listing if he were otherwise mildly mentally retarded.
If he were, in fact, mentally retarded. And this ALJ did find, in fact, that Mr. Griffin did have a severe impairment. That's one reason that he got past step two in the five-step process. And generally, a step two severe impairment in addition to mental retardation will be sufficient under 12.05C. But this
guy has testimony that he's in special education classes, poor academic record, he's illiterate. Surely there's no issue here about the onset of this mental problem he has.
Well, Your Honor, there
is. Whatever it may be. I realize there may be some issues about whether it's below 70, but.
He was not successful in school. He had difficulty in school. I'm unaware.
Did they just put anybody in special education classes?
Your Honor, my understanding, certainly I'm not a mental health professional, but there could be a number of conditions other than mental retardation, any number of learning disabilities, which are vastly distinct from mental retardation, which could lead to special education. There could be a number of physical, neurological, sensory impairments that could lead an individual to being in special education. The mere fact that an individual did not do well in school is not alone sufficient to establish that that individual is mentally retarded. As the medical literature is very clear, adaptive deficits require examining their performance in a number of different areas of their life. School is one of those, but the American Psychiatric Association in the DSM, the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, states that you have to have adaptive deficits in at least two areas of functioning. And the other areas would include work, where this individual never showed any problem with work. He never said that he had any problem with any job prior to being shot. He never left, was fired from a job because he was unable to perform the mental requirements of a job. And he was performing work which the uncontradicted record shows was semi-skilled work. There's no indication that he was in a sheltered workshop or any other special accommodations were made. This individual lived by himself. He lived in a hotel, so he did not have to do a lengthy list of household activities, but the record, uncontradicted evidence, shows that he did not have to be reminded to pay his bills. He went shopping for food. He emptied his garbage and made his bed regularly. He had been married. He fathered children with whom he maintained a relationship. He had friends that he associated with, playing pool, went fishing, went for walks. Again, I'm not suggesting for a moment that these are the equivalent of substantial gainful activity, but they certainly are not evidence of obvious functional adaptive deficits in this individual's life. Opposing counsel, as this court has pointed out, has not presented those. He is suggesting merely that a poor school record combined with a single statement that mild mental retardation should be ruled out satisfies his burden at the third step of proving that he is presumptively disabled due to mental retardation.
But let me ask you, from what you're saying, it sounds, well, I'll just phrase it as a question. Suppose there had been one study, at least, in the record, a credible study that showed that Mr. Griffin had a full-scale IQ of 67 or something, would the commissioner's position still be the same based on this record?
Well, that certainly would have been a different case. It certainly would have been a stronger case on plaintiff's behalf. Certainly nothing prevented plaintiff from obtaining IQ testing at any time. However, a reduced IQ alone, an IQ below 70, is not sufficient to establish mental retardation. That is clearly set forth in the DSM. And in fact, low intelligence, and I'm paraphrasing from the DSM, which I cited in my brief, low intelligence is somewhat of a continuum. And it goes from borderline intellectual functioning, which is generally someone with an IQ from about 71 to 80, and mental retardation, which will be an IQ of 71 or 70 and below. However, the mere diagnosis, an individual with an IQ over 70 or 71 can be diagnosed as mentally retarded if they have sufficient adaptive deficits. An individual with an IQ below 70, I believe even as low as 70, as 67, which certainly would be consistent with the 5-point margin of error, if that individual had no adaptive deficits, then it would be appropriate for that individual not to be diagnosed as mental retardation. And that language is in the DSM.
Yeah. That's what I wanted to know whether, I mean, I realize it's not our case, but I'm just trying to figure out how important this evidence is. It would be at least conceivable that in an appropriate case, the commissioner might find somebody doesn't have the rest of the elements necessary to find.
Yes, that's in some of the other cases in Mendez, which was cited. That individual did have a lower IQ, and I submit that ALJ found that individual did have significant adaptive deficits. This ALJ noted that they did not have the required IQ, and they did not have the required adaptive deficits.
So what about this ALJ responsibility to develop the record? That really seems to be the center point of Mr. Mulvaney's case.
The ALJ certainly could have developed the record more. It would be an unusual case in which the ALJ could not have developed some aspect of the case more. But I'll direct the court to what the ALJ did. When Mr. Griffin first raised the allegation of emotional impairments in his request for reconsideration, as soon as he raised that allegation, the commissioner sent him out for a consultative examination. That was Dr. O'Brien. Dr. O'Brien said the primary diagnosis was adjustment disorder with, I believe there was some cannabis abuse in remission, and then he said, rule out mild mental retardation. The record, including Dr. O'Brien's test report, was reviewed by a state agency physician during reconsideration. That was a mental health professional, the second mental health professional. That doctor assessed this case as best being evaluated under sections 12.04 and 12.09 of the listing of impairments. That's, I believe, a personality disorder and substance abuse. So this second mental health professional that we obtained felt that mental retardation was not the appropriate way to assess this. Then the agency, at this step where opposing counsel bears the burden of proof, which I'm not sure exactly what he believes his burdens of proof and production constitute, we got a third mental health professional, the medical advisor. And his testimony is discussed fully in the records. He says the only firm diagnosis is of an adjustment disorder. Mental retardation is the reference by Dr. O'Brien simply says that's an area that could be further investigated. So, yes, it could have been further investigated. I submit, however, Your Honor, that on this case, the ALJ concluded that the record was satisfactorily, adequately developed such that he could issue a well-reasoned decision.
Okay.
I just wanted to point out with my references to the DSM, when the agency recently revised its mental retardation regulations, they expressly wished their regulations to be more in line with the current state of psychiatric knowledge, and they specifically mentioned the DSM. So it should not puzzle the court that the agency actually requires more than simply a depressed IQ score. They do, in fact, require that the individual be mentally retarded. There were other issues raised. I'd prefer to address any that are of particular interest to this court. Absent that, I thank the court and I request that you affirm the commissioner's decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Mulvaney, how much time?
Well, one thing concerning the judge's reasoning, he seems to argue, let's assume the person was in special education, had a whole slew of adaptive deficits, was clearly mentally retarded, everything, but managed to work for a period of time to the point where he suffered physical disability and could no longer work and had no mental equipment to get a job with. This judge would say that person could never prove 1205C because he worked. Now, secondly, I think that the thrust of the regulation on mental retardation is to what extent does mental retardation impair a person's ability to work? Not the cause of the low IQ, but the effect of the low IQ. A person could have a low IQ due to brain disease, to brain injury, as well as to developmental problems. So all three really could render a person disabled. The agency seems to want to limit this, though, to developmental disability because it knows that once a person turns 21, these school districts throw all those records away. There's never a way to bring it for an adult to bring it to find, obtain, and present the contemporaneous evidence of mental retardation and developmentally caused retardation. Now, the defendant argues, well, he had a poor school record. He had a special education school record, and he was illiterate. Now, those two factors would indicate more than likely he was retarded, not that he had some neurologic problem or physical problem.
What about the learning disability possibility?
It's possible. It's possible. Maybe
speculate based on the evidence that we know.
But that wouldn't indicate a physical impairment causing him to be in special education. There's no evidence for that.
Sometimes they put children with behavioral problems
education. There's no evidence that he had any behavioral problems.
There's no evidence really though that I mean you're asking us to take this one fact and draw the inference that you want from it, but I don't know where we have enough to go on for that.
Well, I think we have Dr. Jarman's testimony combined with Dr. O'Brien's evaluation indicates clearly that further evaluation is needed. And when that appears in the record, this court has ruled that the ALJ has a duty to fully and fairly develop the record. And that's our law. Now, the ALJ's tactics here in turning this man down, he first finds that to the vocational expert that he's limited to sedentary work and asks the vocational expert, can he do his past work? Vocational expert says no, because his past work was medium and heavy. But in his decision, he determines, well, no, his RFC really is he can do medium and heavy work, and therefore he can do his past work. I don't know why. He doesn't explain why he changed his RFC. He doesn't cite any evidence to support it. We think that this is misleading and erroneous. And in addition to his rather erratic decision-making procedure, he resorts to accusation. He alleges that Mr. Griffin should not be believed because he abuses cocaine. Now, the government concedes.
Yes, the government
concedes that.
That's wrong.
There's no evidence to support that allegation.
Right.
And secondly, he accused him of not being credible because he was driving with a suspended driver's license. I couldn't find that anywhere in the record either, and I don't know why that would affect his credibility, that he can't work. I mean, maybe, you know, he doesn't always tell the truth about, driving, or he doesn't always obey the law. He's not a perfect citizen. That doesn't mean he can't work, that he could work, though. We think that that's denial of due process for the judge to make up evidence to use against him and thereby use that to deny his claim. Thank you, Judge. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.